You know, maybe it is Sacramento's fault. Maybe it's the fault of the city and its fans that the Kings aren't any good. Of course, I'm joking. The Kings, for some reason, seem to have it figured out on the road, but at home can't get the job done. With their win against the Clippers in the Staples Center, the Kings are now 2-0 in Southern California, and they're 6-6 on the season outside of the Golden 1 Center. What their record inside the G1C is, we don't need to talk about today. That's because finally some positive vibes. Kings get the victory over a shorthanded Clippers team, but that doesn't matter. They do it with smart shooting. We're going to talk about the difference between good and smart three-point shooting. We'll talk about the strong performance, the breakout performance, really, for Terrence Davis. We'll talk about Davion Mitchell's strong play. It's all on today's episode of the Locked On Kings podcast.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time. Time for another episode of Locked On Kings.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Kings, your podcast hub for Sacramento Kings coverage all regular season and all off season. If you're looking for in-depth analysis, game-by-game breakdowns, highlights, interviews with local and national experts, full coverage of your Sacramento Kings from January through December, this is the place for you, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And today's episode is brought to you by Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility, so start now at shopify.com/LockedOnNBA, all lowercase. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. I've been a Sacramento sports media member for the last 7 years. This is my 8th season covering Kings basketball, formerly with Sports 1140 KHDK Radio in Sac, now with ABC 10 Television. And after the podcast I recorded yesterday following the Kings' embarrassing loss at home to the LA Lakers, in which they completely collapsed in the second half and went away from what they were doing well in the first half, the Kings put together tonight what I believe is their best full performance of the season. And what I mean by that is the Kings played the same way basically from start to finish. Now, that doesn't mean that they dominated the game, and it's different from their performance when they put up 140 against the Charlotte Hornets. That night, the Kings were just making everything they put up. In this game, the Kings were playing basically the same way, and they did not allow the changes in the game, the counter punches at times from Ty Lue and the Los Angeles Clippers, to really affect them or take them out of their game plan. It was truly a complete performance. Now, things had to go right for the Kings to be both willing and able to pull off a complete performance like this. And really what had to go right was the Kings getting off to as good of a start as they did offensively. Shots were falling tonight, not at the rate that they were falling against the Charlotte Hornets, but shots were falling, and the shot selection changed from okay to really good in the second half. And that's where I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about the difference between good and smart shooting that the Kings did between the first and second halves. So we for sure will get into that. But why are the Sacramento Kings better on the road than they are in Sacramento? I don't know if there's really an explanation for it. Now, good teams are typically around 500 or just over 500 on the road, and on their home floor is where they really hold their own and they create separation this season. We know the Kings offensively at home, defensively at home, in total inside the Golden 1 Center this season, they've been really, really bad. They're 3-8 this season inside the Golden 1 Center. But for some reason, away from the G1C, they're 6-6. They're figuring out how to play on the road. I don't know if it's a pressure thing. I don't know if it's the rims. I don't know if it's who knows? Maybe the Delta breeze. That, you remember when they built the Golden 1 Center, how they talked about they're going to have like a ventilation system or something under the seats so the Delta breeze could come through the Golden 1 Center? I don't know if that's a thing or if that was just a poppycock conversation that to make the building sound cooler than it already was when it was being built. But hey, maybe the Delta breeze is seeping into the Golden 1 Center and throwing off the King shots. I don't know. I'm grasping for straws at this point with why the team is so bad at home. But at least on the road, they've been able to handle their business for the most part of the season. They did have that really, really bad road trip earlier on in the season against poor opponents when they were blown out by San Antonio. They blew an 18-point lead against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Listen to me. I'm trying as hard as I can to be positive after a Kings win, and I just can't help but bring in the pessimistic side of things. And I was looking at the first half really the same way, with the good shooting versus the smart shooting. Because in the first half, the Sacramento Kings, they were hitting threes, and it was allowing them to play with a little bit of confidence. They allowed their offense really to affect their defense, which normally you want it to be the other way around. We actually heard Alvin Gentry, Kings interim head coach Alvin Gentry, talk about this after the loss to the Lakers last night. Basically, what he said was he thought that they had allowed their shooting to affect their defense, to where when shots stopped falling in the second half versus the Lakers, when they weren't scoring, weren't having success offensively, defensively, they were taking plays off. They allowed their struggles and frustrations offensively to affect their effort defensively. In games like tonight against the Clippers, when the shots are falling, you can see the positive effect that it has on the Kings defense, because defensively the Kings were active basically all night long, but they still were far too reliant in the first half on three-point shooting in their half-court offense. And really, I ended up tweeting this out around halftime. Basically, what that told me was that the Kings weren't doing anything different offensively from what's gotten them into trouble in recent games. They were still chucking up a ton of threes. The difference was they were going in. And this Kings team this season, quite frankly, hasn't been and isn't a good enough three-point shooting team to just rely on shots going in more often than not for them to have good performances like this. At halftime, the Kings had 9 threes, but they had taken 24 attempts. They made 9 threes in 24 attempts. 24 threes and a half is nuts. Not as crazy in the modern NBA. We've seen the Kings do it before, but like I said, that's gotten the Kings in trouble in the past. However, it was the differences in their three-point shooting in the second half, because the Kings had 6 made threes in the second half, so the shots were still falling. The difference is, I think the Kings only took 15 three-pointers in the second half, if I'm not mistaken. They finished the game 15 of 38 from three-point range. So let's see, quick math, 24 to 38. So a 14. So they went 6 of 14 from three-point range in the second half. That is a significantly better margin, significantly better number. Still under 50%, but that doesn't matter. 14 threes, that's a much better volume for this Kings team. And what the best part was, those threes were coming in the flow of the offense. Not just the made threes, even the missed threes. The shot selection was in the flow of the offense, versus in the first half, I thought it looked like they were just chucking up a bunch of threes because it was either the best shot that they could get, or they just have become far too reliant on that three-point shot like we've seen. So the difference in their three-point volume, their shot selection from beyond the arc between the first half and the second half, I think is very significant. The Kings needed to hit 9 threes to have the first half that they did. The Kings didn't need all 6 of their threes in the second half, but it was good to have them, especially because they got such a strong performance out of Terrence Davis. Finally, a breakout game for Terrence Davis. He was really good for the Kings in preseason, led the Kings in scoring during preseason. Not that that matters too much, but after the Kings acquired him at the trade deadline last season, he ended the season really, really well. So much so that we had conversation all offseason long about Terrence Davis being the Buddy Hield replacement. Terrence Davis being a better all-around scorer than Buddy, not the three-point shooter that Buddy Hield is, but a better all-around scorer who also might not be a defensive liability. This season, he's been really, really bad. I think he had 2 13-point games in the early parts of the season. Other than that, he hasn't reached double digits. He's just been really, really bad, to where he even fell out of the lineup for a week or two when Luke Walton was still here in Sacramento. Now, with the injuries to Harrison Barnes and Mo Harkless, he's getting some opportunity as a starter, and I appreciate the fact that Alvin Gentry is starting Davis, giving him that spot and not giving it to Buddy Hield. And we're going to talk about Buddy Hield in the next segment, because you would think with how good of a three-point night the Kings had, Buddy Hield would have been at the center of that. Well, he wasn't. And I think that's a telling and positive thing. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But Terrence Davis finally gave the Kings what they've been asking for out of him. Now, a 23-point performance, 20-plus points a night is not something you can expect out of Davis. If you get 13 a night from Terrence Davis, then that's really solid for what his role is. But we know with Davis's streakiness, the microwave scorer that he is, he's capable of performances like this. And we saw how hot he got. He was playing well offensively in the first half, but really it was the second half, the third quarter in particular, where he got going. He was hitting threes. He was also getting out in transition, scoring around the rim. It was that all-around scoring that we've seen. He goes 9-14 or went 9-14 from the field, 5-9 from three-point range in this game. Also 4 rebounds, a couple assists, 3 steals. He did really well on the defensive end, providing some steals as well. Like, it was just a very, very solid game for Terrence Davis. Now, as Rico Hines says, Kings assistant coach Rico Hines, can he and the Kings stack days? A performance like this doesn't matter if they can't build off of it. We're talking about an individual perspective for Terrence Davis. If he can't build off this 23-point performance, and I'm not talking about when the Kings and Clippers meet in Sacramento on Saturday, him topping 23 points or scoring 23 again. I'm talking about whether he starts or whether Harrison Barnes is back or Mo Harkless is back. If he gets playing time, he comes in and is shooting with the same confidence and is having the same impact on the game. Having the same impact doesn't mean scoring the same amount of points or hitting the same amount of shots. It means being the offensive threat that defenses have to respect that he was in this game for the Kings, providing offense when they needed it, especially when De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Haliburton or Rashawn Holmes were on the bench. So Terrence has to stack performances and build off of this, and the Kings as a whole have to build off of this. Because like I said, I thought this was their most complete performance of the season, even when the Clippers went on a few runs and they went on a big like 14-0 run, I think, in the fourth quarter. They ended up scoring 39 points in the fourth quarter to make this final score 124-115 look a lot better than what it actually was. The Kings were up 25 at one point in this game in the second half. So too big of a run there by the Clippers in the fourth, too many points scored by the Clippers in the fourth quarter to skew that final score a little bit. So the Kings obviously need to clean that up. But with the exception of that, I thought the Kings, they stuck to their game plan. They were playing hard defensively, not necessarily always making the right plays defensively, but they were getting out in transition, forcing steals. Davion Mitchell, who we're going to also talk about in the podcast today, did very well on both ends of the floor. And then offensively, the shot selection got better. They never went away from the Tyrese Haliburton, Rashawn Holmes pick and roll, which was a disaster of them going away from it in the second half against the Lakers. That got me so hot on yesterday's podcast, where I was just, my mind was blown why the success of the Haliburton, Rashawn Holmes pick and roll, the Kings didn't try and carry over into the second half of that Laker loss. Just for the most part, game plan wise, from what I understand of Alvin Gentry's game plan, the Kings were able to execute it for basically the entirety of this game. And that might be the first time this season they've been able to do that. Like I said, we're going to talk about Buddy Hield. We're going to talk about Rashawn Holmes, and we're going to talk about the elite status with both of those players, because that's been a term, elite has been a term debated, especially around Buddy Hield. But that term needs to be attached to Rashawn Holmes with one particular skill set. We'll talk about that, plus the great play of Davion Mitchell here in just a second. But like I said in the introduction of the podcast, today's episode brought to you by our friends at Shopify. Shopify is amazing. Shopify, in case you don't know, is a complete commerce platform that lets you start, grow, and manage a business. It's a subscription-based software that allows anyone to set up an online store and sell their product. Shopify owners can also sell in physical locations using Shopify POS, their point-of-sale app, and accompanying hardware. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved only for big businesses. So upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility, and Shopify helps you make your entrepreneurial dreams come true. Shopify powers over 1.7 million businesses from first sale to full scale, reaching customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, social media, all of those bells and whistles. It allows you to gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. Go to Shopify.com, use promo code LOCKEDONNBA, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Again, that's Shopify.com/LOCKEDONNBA right now. Shopify.com/LOCKEDONNBA. Locked On Kings also brought to you by Truebill. I've been telling you about Truebill a lot over recent weeks, and this is an app that I have now become reliant upon, and it saved me over $200 at this point. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. I'm not there yet, but Truebill might get me there. What Truebill does is basically it sees all of the subscription services that you have, even the ones that you've forgotten about, and it makes it easy for you to cancel those subscriptions, because in reality, companies make it difficult. They make it hard to cancel. Truebill makes it incredibly simple. All you do is link your accounts, and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in just one tap. That's it. You don't have to go to the website or call somebody or enter a bunch of information, go through a survey about why you're not using the subscription service anymore. None of that. Just one tap. Also, your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to. Truebill has over 2 million users and has helped them save over $100 million already in this app's short existence. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now to Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands of dollars a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. So the Kings have a game where they had a lot of success from three-point range. They have a performance where they finish with 15 made threes as a team. If you didn't watch the game and I were to tell you that, I think the first thing that would pop in your head is, okay, how many threes did Buddy Hield have? And then maybe the second question is, but how many threes did Buddy Hield attempt, right? What might surprise you, what should surprise you, what surprised me, but also I think is very telling and positive for this Sacramento Kings team, is that the Kings had 15 made threes as a team and Buddy Hield had zero of them. None. Not a single three made for Buddy Hield. And to Buddy's credit to some extent, but also to the credit of Alvin Gentry, Buddy had just three attempts from three-point range. Now, we know Buddy Hield is capable of putting up three attempts in a 24-second shot clock. Buddy Hield usually has three attempts by the time he's been in the game for just 1 minute coming off the bench. He has the green light to shoot. Sometimes, actually, oftentimes, way too much of a green light, way too bright of a green light to shoot. And I thought Alvin Gentry did a masterful job of managing Buddy Hield and the Kings rotations as a whole in this game, especially missing such an important piece like Harrison Barnes, and especially with you having no wing depth with both Barnes and Harkless out. It also helped that Terrence Davis was having the day that he was having, so Gentry could reward Davis by giving him significant amounts of playing time, as Davis ended up playing nearly 30 minutes in this game, 6 seconds shy of 30 minutes. Tyrese Halliburton also played a boatload of minutes in this game, 40 minutes played. He had a really effective 12 point and 11 assist double-double. The Kings, by the way, had 28 assists in this game. It helps when the shots are falling. Those assist totals are naturally going to go up, but the Kings' ball movement, especially in the second half, very, very solid for the Kings in this game. But I thought Gentry did a good job not leaning too heavily on Buddy Hield. Buddy finished with just 4 points. He played 22 minutes. So some might look at that, and I know that it's easy to pick on Buddy Hield. I've certainly have picked on Buddy Hield before, and I've talked about the frustrations that I have with Buddy. I don't think Buddy Hield works with this team, works with this core long-term. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Buddy Hield is at the top of the Kings trading block to try and get rid of, along with Marvin Bagley at this deadline. I don't know. But I wouldn't call this a bad performance from Buddy in this game. I think the fact that he only put up 7 shots in 22 minutes is it does him a little bit of credit, because his shot selection wasn't horrific. He did have a couple shots where it's like, okay, Buddy, like you can count on one or two of those a game from Buddy, right? And sometimes they go in, most of the time they don't. But I give Buddy credit, and maybe this is searching too hard for positivity at this point in time. I give Buddy credit for not panicking because he was having a struggle shooting night, panicking because he didn't have a made three, and just chucking up a bunch of shots. Now, he barely played in the second half, if I remember correctly, barely played in the fourth quarter at all, which I also give credit to Alvin Gentry there. Like I said, it helped that Terrence Davis was having the night that he had. You stuck with your hot hand. You played Tyrese Halliburton heavy minutes. You played De'Aaron Fox heavy minutes. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Kings were able to sustain and be more consistent with their performance with Buddy getting less minutes and less opportunity to score. not trying to turn this into a bag on Buddy Hield session. Really, I'm trying to be positive about this, but I do think it's telling and positive for the Kings that they were able to have a hot shooting performance and it wasn't completely reliant upon Buddy Hield. The term elite shooter has been attached to Buddy for really since he signed his second contract with the Kings. And elite shooter is a term that I hear used mostly by those outside of Sacramento when assessing Buddy Hield. And a lot of these people, quite honestly, and no disrespect, they don't watch Buddy play. They look at Buddy's numbers. They see a box score. They see shooting percentages. They see the volume of threes and the amount of made threes. They see the occasional 30-point performance or 28-point performance and go, man, Buddy Hield's great. They also see the graphics that the Kings like to put up every time there's any significant information in regards to Buddy Hield, how he compares to Steph Curry. Oh, Buddy Hield has made this many threes compared to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, or only Steph Curry and Klay Thompson have done the same. Like, he's an elite company. But there's a very big difference between Buddy Hield and Steph Curry. Mainly, Buddy Hield does all that on a losing team. Steph Curry does all that as the MVP of a winning team. Big difference there. It's one thing to put up numbers. It's another thing to put up numbers and win. And that's the major distinction. I also know a lot of people outside of Sacramento attach the elite term to Buddy and blame the Kings or blamed Luke Walton or Dave Yeager for not being able to maximize Buddy's potential or not be able to maximize Buddy Hield's eliteness in Sacramento. Well, Buddy's struggling because it's the Kings' fault. The Kings don't know how to use him. No, Buddy isn't very good at anything other than chucking up a bunch of threes. And when he catches fire, he's an absolute flamethrower and it's fun to watch. He can win you games at times. He can also shoot you out of a game very, very, very quickly. So I'm okay with using elite when talking about Buddy Hield's three-point shooting because it really is an incredible skill. He doesn't use it or maximize it in an elite way, though. There's a difference there. His skill as a three-point shooter is elite, but he doesn't maximize it. His shooting is elite. His shot selection, that's not elite. But I do want to take that elite term and I do want to attach it to Rashawn Holmes because this is the second straight season that Rashawn is going to finish top two, top three, maybe even number one in field goal percentage unless he completely collapses over the second half of the season, which isn't going to happen. It's like him and Rudy Gobert at the top for the second straight season. Rashawn Holmes around the rim is really, really good. Like, I think we take it for granted and we kind of brush over it because he's a big, but it's on par with some of the best three-point shooters in the league. Like the three-point shot is obviously a lot more exciting. It's a more difficult shot at times, put an asterisk there, but it's we put more attention on a Steph Curry three or a Klay Thompson three or a Buddy Hield three and the significance of that shot, how much that shot is worth, one extra point than a two-pointer, all of the above, than we do on a big's ability to score around the rim. Oh, it's just an easier shot. But anybody who's played basketball before, anybody who's tried to just finish a layup through traffic, and I'm not talking about like NBA level attack traffic and going over seven footers and double teams and shot blockers and guards poking the ball away from you. I'm not talking about that traffic. I'm just talking about at your basic gym, trying to lay up. That's not trying to finish a right-handed or left-handed layup. That's not a basic layup line. Like it's not easy. It's a skill to have touch around the rim. And Rashawn Holmes, whether it's his floater in the paint, whether it's finishing through traffic around the rim, his double clutch dunk that he doesn't give enough credit for, which is really difficult to do, where he goes up, pulls the ball down, and then goes up again to avoid shot blockers. Those are very, very difficult plays that Rashawn makes on a nightly basis. Everything Rashawn shoots, we expect to go in because of his 70-plus percent field goal percentage right now. Like, I think it is fair to say that Rashawn Holmes is an elite finisher around the rim. And he is not necessarily elite, but he is very, very, very good at pick and roll scoring. Very good. I love Rashawn Holmes. I want to make sure we start, if we're going to use the term elite, Sure, we can talk about Buddy Hield's three-point shooting. We also have to talk about his Rashawn Holmes' elite finishing around the rim. And we can talk about De'Aaron Fox's elite speed, which hasn't been on total display. We saw flashes of it against the Lakers. Didn't see too much speed, but we did see a lot of really smart play from De'Aaron Fox in the Kings' win tonight. He finished with 24 points, 7 of 14 shooting from the field, 2 of 4 from three-point range, 8 of 9 from the free throw line, which you love to see there. It was more of that kind of coast to a solid performance for De'Aaron, but it was nice to see him have a solid performance like that in a Kings win. But we still have to talk about Davion Mitchell, and I'm excited to talk about Davion Mitchell and give him some of his flowers, because there's one thing that he's done as a rookie that's very difficult to do as a rookie, and it doesn't have anything to do with the defensive end of the floor. We'll talk about that in just a second. Right now, though, I want to let you know today's episode of Locked On Kings brought to you by betonline.ag. BetOnline has you covered all season long. More props, more odds, more lines than ever before, with football season continuing their march to the playoffs, basketball season, now that we're in December, really getting into the thick of things. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the sports action this season. Head to their new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. All you have to do is use promo code LOCKEDON to receive that bonus. It's free money for you to make more money with, from basketball to football, NHL hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. We know that Davion Mitchell's main appeal coming into the NBA was his defense. And I don't know if we've taken Mitchell's defense for granted or if it's just not been on display as much as it was earlier in the season. Like, he hasn't had that same pop and same fire and for lack of a better term, like pizzazz defensively as what got Kings fans buzzing during the preseason and the early stages of the regular season. We also question whether or not Mitchell was going to be able to sustain that kind of defensive intensity that he plays with on a nightly basis over an 82 game regular NBA season. We've seen that defense drop off at times. We also know that Davion, there's only so much he can do as a really good individual defender on a very bad Kings overall team defensive group. But defensively, Davion Mitchell was very, very good in this game against the Clippers. He set the tone coming in off the bench early in this game. There was a play, it was either in the first quarter, it was definitely in the first half, where Mitchell was hounding, I think it was Reggie Jackson. It might have been Terrence Mann. It was somebody who was controlling the ball, and Mitchell knocks the ball away, and they're kind of scrambling for it, and Mitchell is on the floor going for the loose ball, pops up and like dives towards whichever Clipper had the ball, forcing that Clipper to try and just get rid of the ball to get Davion Mitchell off of him, and ended up in a steal and a fast break opportunity for the Kings. Just one of those classic Davion Mitchell turning defense into offense where he's not going to get an assist. He didn't score the basket. There's nothing on the box score that is going to say that, well, maybe there's a steal, but there's nothing offensively on the box score that says Davion Mitchell is responsible for that bucket that the Kings scored. But everybody who watched that moment knew that that was all because of Davion Mitchell. So he provided those defensive moments in this game that we have already grown to love from Mitchell as a rookie here in the NBA. But the question marks, right, were always with Mitchell offensively. And he had a great final season at Baylor shooting the basketball, and we weren't sure how well that was going to translate to the NBA. We weren't sure if that season was an anomaly or not. And so far this season, Mitchell has really struggled shooting the basketball, not just from three-point range, shooting period. Like, he's been statistically one of the worst shooters in the NBA to this point. Now, that's amongst players who are actually getting legitimate playing time and are actual legitimate rotation players in the NBA. He's been struggling. But what I appreciate about Davion is that he hasn't let that affect him. He is shooting the same exact shots, whether they're in traffic or wide open, the same exact way as he was early in the season. He hasn't changed. His confidence hasn't waned, even with the shots not falling. And that is impressive for a rookie, because a lot of rookie shooters, and we've seen plenty of them come through Sacramento, Ben McLemore, Nick Stauskas, those are the biggest two I'm thinking of right off the bat, will come into the league after being known for shooting in college, struggle, and change their game. Jimmer Fredette, we saw to some extent with that too, or they lose their confidence, and that one strong skill set that they brought into the NBA. They're struggling to find it. They lose that confidence, and sooner or later, they're out of the league. Davion has kept and maintained that shooting confidence, even though he's not known as being a shooter. And finally, in tonight's game, it paid off. He hit his first three-point attempts and ended up missing his last one, but went 3 of 4 from three-point range, 7 of 10 from the field, a 20-point performance for Davion. I think that's his, it's definitely his second, might be his third, but I think it's only his second 20-plus point performance this season. Anytime you can get that kind of boost from Mitchell offensively off the bench, in addition to what he provides defensively, that's phenomenal for the Kings. And I want to make sure to give him his props and point out the confidence that he's continued to shoot the basketball with, the faith that he has, the trust that he has in that shot, and quite honestly, the trust that his teammates and the Kings coaching staff has in him taking that shot, because they have been good shots. The majority of the shots that Davion Mitchell put up, even if he's missing them, they've been good looks in the flow of the offense. And I think Mitchell deserves a lot of credit for that as well. It's nice to do a positive podcast. It's really nice to do a positive podcast here. Happy to talk about a Kings win. It doesn't mean anything if the Kings can't build off of it and they're facing the exact same Clippers team who probably, I think, will have Paul George. Yeah, he decided to sit out in this game. And of course, that's a big difference for why the Kings were able to be effective. Maybe Paul George was ducking Davion Mitchell after how Mitchell locked him up for a couple possessions in preseason. That's the narrative that I'm going to go with because it makes me feel a little bit better. But Paul George more than likely will play in the Kings-Clippers rematch on Saturday inside the Golden 1 Center. And can the Kings build off this performance? Can individual players build off their strong performances? We'll have to wait and see with that. Want to hear your thoughts now on this game? Send them to me at MattGeorgeSac on Twitter. Email me, MattGeorgeSports@gmail.com. You can also comment down in the YouTube comment section below if you're watching on YouTube. I want to hear your thoughts. The discussion on all my recent podcasts over the last 2-3 weeks, the amount of messages I've gotten, comments I've gotten has been phenomenal. Please keep that up. Love this Kings fan base. Even though over these last 2 weeks, it's been more negative than positive, I appreciate that conversation. Keep it up. Absolutely love it. And if you listen on Spotify, the Spotify Wrapped thing is out right now. And I've already had people sending me screenshots of Locked On Kings being their number one podcast or in their top 5 podcasts of the year. If that's you, please continue to send me those screenshots. They make my day. And I'll be sure to thank you personally if you do that. So thank you for all the support as always. I hope you enjoy these next couple days off of no Kings basketball. The plan as of right now is to not have a podcast, but I might sneak a podcast in there with a guest. We'll have to wait and see. Definitely we'll have a podcast after the Kings hopefully win at home against the Lakers, or rather the Clippers, on Saturday. Until then, my name is Matt George. You have been listening to Locked On Kings, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.